This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which by looking at many of your emails, comments on Facebook, has become one of your favorite features among our Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Of course, we have Clinical Focus Podcast. We have great interviews, but every week I visit with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and we endeavor to answer your questions. You never know what you're going to hear. That's part of the excitement, and it may actually relate to, may be germane to a particular condition that you or a loved one suffer from, or if you've got a burning nutritional question, it may appear here. And if you want to pose your question, send it to us via radio program at AOL.com. Make your question succinct and make it relevant, hopefully, because we reserve the right to select questions of general interest for our audience, and we can't answer complex medical questions. So how you doing, Layla?
Okay. How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Good. Okay. We got Jewish holidays behind us. Back to work. Things should be picking up. The fall weather should start getting brisker, and the trees are beginning to transform themselves. Actually, I have to say, I was up in Boston for Derek Jeter's last game last week.
Wow.
And we went out into the country to look at Lexington and Concord, and the leaves had actually begun to change. So, you know, for those of you listening in Massachusetts, New England, New Hampshire, Maine, you're going to see some pretty significant leaf changes. And for the rest of you in the middle eastern seaboard, you better make some weekend plans, because I think the leaves are going to turn early this season. All right.
Such a wonderful season.
It really is great. You know, I feel good, you know, because it's a little cooler and it's so invigorating. It's really nice. You know,
yeah.
It's also after those hard slogging runs and workouts in the hot summer weather, although we've had a merciful summer, it wasn't that bad. It's great to, get out there in a cooler temperatures. You know, ideal running weather is about, in my opinion, in the 40s or 50s. So, before we get to questions, I do want to comment on this one. This one's interesting because it talks about a simple test that can tell people whether they may only have 5 years left to live.
Okay. Oh my goodness!
So,
who would want that test?
Yeah, I don't know, but actually, you're right, because there are certain tests that we do that, you know, sometimes are the crack of doom, you know, like that breast cancer test that, you know, we have to advise patients very carefully. Do you really want to know? You know, it's like that famous line by Jack Nicholson. Can you handle the truth? You want the truth? Can you handle? You remember that from that famous courtroom scene? Mm-hmm. Okay, so for those of you who can handle the truth, and I think you may have seen the story, Layla, people who no longer smell peppermint, fish, rose, or leather may have only 5 years left to live.
Peppermint, fish, rose, or leather.
Yeah.
Okay, I smell all of those. Do you?
Absolutely. And I, you know, unfortunately, I smell all too much here in New York City. Sometimes I wish I had less olfactory sense, because the aromas of a hot August day in New York City are, you know, not too pleasant.
That's cooked garbage you're smelling.
Exactly. It's fermenting. It's a microbiome that's being created in the garbage cans. It says here, those who lose smell are six times as likely as others to die within the next 5 years. A poor sense of smell raises the odds of death more than established medical conditions, including cancer. So, in other words, you could say, well, you know, if you ask the question, well, how do you know whether you're going to live in the next 5 years? Well, if you have cancer, if you have pre-existing heart disease, well, certainly you have a higher risk of death with those conditions. But actually, these simple scratch and sniff tests are actually more predictive of your risk of dying. It sounds like kind of a gimmick, but according to the researchers, men and women who've lost their sense of smell are far more likely, six times more likely as others to die in the next 5 years. And, well, you know, uh-huh. Go ahead. Yeah.
What about the reason for losing sense of smell? Certain medications can cause loss of smell. Are those people included?
Well, I don't know. You know, yes. In fact, there are medications that damage the sense of smell. Strong antibiotics, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that it has to do simply with the brain and the nervous system. This is an old story because we know that loss of smell may be an early telltale sign of Alzheimer's because the olfactory nerve is really part of the brain that extends down into the nose. And it's a primitive part of the brain, but when it doesn't work, it suggests that the rest of the brain's not working well. So it's one of the senses that's very closely related to brain function. I think there's some studies that suggest Parkinson's may be related to loss of smell. And look, here's a caution. There are some people who've had a loss of smell and or taste, and that doesn't mean they're doomed. They may have other reasons for that. Sometimes severe viruses, respiratory infections can damage the olfactory nerve and upset the sense of smell. And, you know, we have to distinguish between the sense of smell and the sense of taste. Actually, when you taste food, it's really mostly olfactory. It's mostly smell.
75% olfactory.
Exactly. So when you have a cold, you can't taste anything. It's not your taste buds and your tongue are damaged. It's that your olfactory sense is deprived. So, it's an interesting study, you know, interesting, parlor game, something that you can, you know, get out the roses, the fish, and the leather samples, peppermint samples, mm-hmm. and, you know, check it out. And then, make sure that you have, an estate attorney on hand and an insurance broker. And perhaps even a funeral director, because
meanwhile, I'm going to go home and smell my coat closet. I'm going to smell my leather jacket.
Your expression, smell the roses? That's a very real expression. Okay.
Yeah.
Got to smell the roses while you can. All right. So let's get back to some of the questions that we have from listeners. What do you got this week?
Okay. This is from Anna, who's a nutritionist in Germany.
Oh, wow. That's
Dear
cool.
Dear Dr. Hoffman.
We have an international audience. Great.
She's a nutritionist in Germany.
I'm going to say a greeting to her. Guten Tag.
There you go.
I speak some German. So.
Yeah. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I've been listening to Dr. Hoffman's talk during the Evolution of Medicine Summit and have been delighted about all the information available.
That's great.
I saw that Dr. Hoffman was doing podcasts as well, and I wanted to ask whether you could do a podcast or maybe an article about how to treat or ease the side effects during chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a nutritionist in Germany working with a doctor's office, mostly treating patients who receive parenteral nutrition, intravenous nutrition. The most common side effects and complaints seem to be fatigue, mm-hmm. stomach and bowel pain, diarrhea, water retention, heartburn, neuropathies. What supplements that do not affect cancer medication can be used?
Okay.
Very broad question.
Very broad question.
This might be a clinical focus for you.
Yeah, actually, I might do – that's a good idea. I might do a clinical focus on that, and it would be very detailed. And actually, if a recommendation to this listener and anybody else who wants to know about this is please get the book by Lise Al Schuler.
Al Schuler.
It's called The Definitive Guide to Cancer – and it's a very, very detailed description of the interactions between nutrients and chemotherapy agents and what to do for certain cancers and what to do for various types of the side effects of chemo, side effects of radiation. There's a nice discussion in there. The problem is that this is really a moving picture. It's almost you'd want a digital book because things change quickly. New chemo agents are introduced.
Yeah.
We learn new things from studies about what are the compatibilities, what works well with chemo, what antagonizes chemo. It's complicated. It's very complicated. And we as well as I that there is no single diet that is applicable to cancer.
That's true.
We actually don't want to terribly restrict people nutritionally when they're extremely nauseous and debilitated from chemo. This is not a time sometimes to tell people to be on like a macrobiotic diet or something because they'll waste away.
Mm-hmm.
So there's diets for cancer prevention. There's diets to be administered during chemo. There's diets to prevent cancer from recurring. There are diets to deal with patients near the end stage where cachexia is an issue, where we may want to use a lot of fish oil to offset cachexia. Fish oil has been shown to offset that wasting syndrome that is an end stage of cancer. Also, in terms of things that help energy, if generally, and usually these are compatible with chemo, L-carnitine in some studies has been shown to be helpful, in other studies not. You know, for chemo fatigue, I found that NT factor was very helpful. Propax with NT factor, I used to talk about that a lot, but where it really came to my attention is in treating debilitated cancer patients. I gave them Propax with NT factor, and they really perked up, and that got my attention. I became a spokesperson for that company for a while. Very popular supplement line that helps with energy. And so the other thing that has been shown to be helpful is American ginseng. And that would be the, the species name of American ginseng. Maybe we can look it up. It contradistinction to traditional Korean or Chinese ginseng. It actually has been shown in a, admittedly a small study, but a significant study to be helpful to support energy during chemo. You know, what I have to say to our German colleague is that I really admire the German system in terms of cancer, because they're very open to the admixture of conventional treatments, the best of natural, the best of high-tech medicine, the best of natural therapies. They also use a lot of hyperthermia over there. They use immune-stimulating therapies with vaccines. And I think that Germany is a really progressive place from the standpoint of treating cancer. So but more power to our colleague there.
Just a little disclosure here. My father was a patient over in Bad Aibling near Munich. He had hyperthermia for his rectal cancer.
Yes.
Which worked well, but then he succumbed to other things that came later. And but no, he had a very, very good experience over there with the hyperthermia.
Yeah, and that's and again, our good colleague Dr. Ralph Moss catalogs cancer centers across the world. You know, people sometimes may want to take it on the road when limited options exist in the United States. And he has visited many of the clinics in Germany and has rated them. I mean, some are, you know, overrated, and some engage in, you know, maybe over-the-top claims of efficacy, and others really are doing some fantastic innovative work. So I really feel very proud to have a follower who's involved in that sector of intelligent medicine over there in Germany.
Wow. Oh, any other besides besides the supplements mentioned? She mentions heartburn as being a side effect. I don't see that DGL would interfere with anything.
No, absolutely not. Glutamine has been helpful for there's no question that glutamine has been helpful for protecting the intestine from damage. In fact, it's actually on formulary in many cancer hospitals as a way of preventing severe damage to the rapidly growing cells in the intestine. You know, you lose your hair with chemo, and rapidly growing cells get damaged. And the most rapidly growing cells in the body are the cells that turn over in the mouth, you know, and in the intestinal tract. So you can get very bad mouth ulcers, but also damage to the intestinal tract. L-glutamine seems to prevent that. And especially if you're going to get radiation for like uterine cancer, you may want to take L-glutamine to protect your intestine, because the intestine is often in the way of that and can get damaged. Now less with the more targeted radiation.
Yeah. Okay. Anna, thank you for your email.
Yeah. And we'd love to, you know, keep hearing from you. So keep up the great work. Yeah. Viel Glück. Viel Glück. That's good luck in German.
Good luck. The next question is from Judy. I have a family history of blood clots, and both my brothers and I are on Coumadin for years. My twin brother just got another blood clot in his leg while being on Coumadin for years. How common is that, and what would you recommend he do to prevent this from happening again?
Okay.
The blood clots despite Coumadin. That's a little scary.
Yeah, that is scary. And we've had patients like that before. Once there is an area that is inflamed or irregular around an old clot, it tends to gather platelets to it, and it becomes a like a sticky surface on which clots can form. So this is a dilemma in medicine. So you thin the blood, okay, fine, but you still have that sticky surface. A couple of things could be used. We might use proteolytic enzymes, things like Wobenzyme.
Oh.
I really have
Wobenzyme,
some...
Wobenzyme, Vascuzyme.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Vascuzyme is a product
Vascuzyme
as well.
Vascuzyme might be particularly good for this. Yeah.
Specifically designed for this. And then also there's a product called Nattokinase from Japan, which you have to be a little cautious when you use it with a blood thinner because it has fibrinolytic effects. It actually prevents fibrin clots. So some sources say don't even think about using it with aspirin or using it with any kind of blood thinner. I think it can synergize, especially when Coumadin isn't doing the trick, when it isn't adequate. So, you know, cautiously introducing some Nattokinase might be helpful. And, of course, fish oil is beneficial. Fish oil, you know, they say is a blood thinner, and indeed as a standalone, it does thin the blood somewhat. But when combined with Coumadin, we don't usually see bleeding episodes. In fact, studies show that episodes of adverse bleeding – accidental bleeding that occur often on Coumadin are reduced when fish oil is introduced. So that's paradoxical. You might think, oh, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 there. You get a heightened bleeding effect, and you might run the risk of severe bruising or bleeding. And no, in fact, when you add fish oil to Coumadin, most studies suggest that that is not the case. So it's a safe addition. Maybe perhaps some vitamin E, gamma E rich, also has beneficial effects on blood clotting.
Dr. Hoffman, would exercise be helpful here at all?
Well, absolutely. I mean, but the right kind of exercise, because what we find is that, you know, people really pound the pavement, they have more likelihood of blood clots in their lower extremities. But people who are sedentary, the blood can sludge and it doesn't get pumped adequately. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so a moderate program of walking, moderate exercise will help to circulate the blood. Yeah. And, you know, then there are vein formulas. There's Jarrow's, very nice. I think it's called, it used to be called Vein PF. Now it's called Venus Optimizer,
Venus.
I think.
Yeah.
Venus Optimizer. Not like Venus the planet, but Venous. And it's got some nice agents that help the veins.
Okay.
Diosmin and Butcher's Broom and things like that. No vitamin K here, though. Don't take vitamin K. That's not a good thing, because that'll neutralize
especially
the Coumadin.
Right. Okay, best of luck to Judy and your brothers.
Yeah, it's a
All
tough
right.
one.
We have another one.
Yeah, we have time. Mm-hmm.
This is from a person who calls themselves cot dependent.
Oh.
Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla.
Dude.
Can you suggest natural...
Dude, where's my hash pipe? I'm sorry, I don't want to make light of this. But
can you suggest natural supplements for insomnia?
Whoa.
Marijuana works great, but I want to stop using it.
Whoa.
I tried glycine and taurine. Any suggestions?
Okay.
Oh, boy.
You know, now that the statute of limitations has expired, I can admit that I inhaled in the past. You know, just like previous presidents, now we have a president in the White House who's admitted all kinds of drug use. So I'm you know, part of that generation. I got to say that I had exactly the opposite result when I smoked pot, is I would try and lie down and my head would spin and all kinds of like bizarre thoughts would be racing through my brain. And it actually had the opposite effect. It actually induced insomnia. It didn't put me to sleep. It didn't knock me out or relax me. So different strokes for different folks. We know that with marijuana.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, get chilled out, relaxed. Other people get agitated and anxious. You know, it's a very, you know, individualized response. So, okay, so this guy puts himself, presumably a guy, right?
Now,
guy puts himself to sleep with
marijuana.
We don't
know. Just have
person.
No idea the gender, the sex, but they've tried glycine and taurine.
Yeah.
So glycine, definitely they've tried I'm drawing a blank on our glycom.
Right.
They've obviously tried glycom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they need melatonin.
We also have that Insomnitrol product, which is a combo product, which has passion flower, 5-HTP.
Right.
You know, valerian.
German chamomile.
Sometimes
lemon balm,
sometimes kava. Kava will do this, although kava, it really is, it's something you should take at night because it can leave you a little bit stoned. You know, which doesn't seem to be a problem with this individual. You know, what else? I mean, you really do a good job with patients around the sleep hygiene issues. Maybe you can, you know, recite some of those.
You
know, I usually say, look, go talk to Layla about sleep hygiene. And actually, many patients have said, even just after, it's amazing, after a conversation with you, they say, I learned some things from her about how to properly sleep, and now I do these things and I sleep better. So behavioral things like not watching TV till late hours, you know, some dietary things.
Not looking at the computer, anything that has to do with that blue light.
Yeah.
That's informing your brain that it's still daylight.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to make melatonin. What I found most interesting about sleep hygiene is that the optimal bedroom or sleeping temperature is between 60 and 68 degrees mm-hmm. Fahrenheit.
Meat locker.
People don't know
meat
that.
Locker temperature.
Yeah, a little meat locker, cave,
yeah, right.
whatever. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah. I love to sleep cool. I love to sleep cool. And, you know, and putting the blankets on is just luxurious. It feels great. You know, I also think, you know, it also has to do with, you know, generalized anxiety. You know, exercise plays a role, and exercise is a two-edged sword because I sometimes walk home late at night and I see people, you know, in the windows of some of these 24-hour exercise places, and I go, how the heck in the world are they exercising at like 11:30 at night? But I guess these are, you know, people who can just put their head to the pillow and fall asleep. I think exercise is best
unless
in the
they're
morning.
Working different shifts. That could be their morning if they're a graveyard shift worker or something.
That's possible. They could be like, you know, the paralegals who work overnight in law firms in New York and start their day at 11:30 and get ready for the attorneys to arrive at 8 in the morning. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know, look, we are losing touch with our circadian rhythms. We need to get out in the light, especially this time of year. I'm beginning already, because I get up early, to use a SAD light, seasonal affective disorder light, with a proper light frequency to activate my brain in the morning, because it's pitch dark when I wake up. And then, you know, as you say, you know, avoidance of light later in the day helps to reset your circadian rhythm. Melatonin can help that as well at bedtime. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, like a, it's complex. This person may literally be dependent on marijuana. They say, oh, you can't become addicted to marijuana. Well, studies show that there's both a physical and psychological dependency for some people, not everyone, but for some people.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, it's in their best interest to stop. I'm glad that they're deciding that they want to stop using it, and that's the number one thing that you can do.
Right.
So,
just parenthetically, I will mention that one of the themes for 2014 and 2015 that I will highlight is that marijuana-like substances are going to make a big splash. And I'm not talking smoking reefers. I'm talking about specific derivatives of marijuana and hemp oil. In particular, something called CBD, cannabidiol, will, I think, make a big splash as a therapeutic agent. It's anti-inflammatory. It may have anti-cancer effects. It may have great effects in terms of digestive disorders like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. I'm investigating this area intensively, and not on a recreational basis, you know, on a scientific basis, because I think it's these products are going to be legal and available over the counter. And I think that there's some real potential there because, you know, just as this is an herbal product with some very interesting properties. And on the one hand, it's, you know, marijuana, you know, there's a reason they call it dope. But on the other hand, there are some potentially beneficial medical effects that need to be harnessed here. And we're going to investigate that for our listening audience thoroughly in 2014 and 2015 coming up. All right. This is a good break point for today's discussion. Let's stipulate this is part one of our two-part Q&A with Layla. We'll pause briefly, and when we return in part two, what's coming up? Oh, I have a question, and I received
a question.
A question that I received via Facebook, which is, Dr. Hoffman, what do you think of injectable testosterone? We'll take that question up in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.